The oil market as militants reach a key refinery in Iraq.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. Sunni extremists in Iraq have put up their black banners on watchtowers at Iraq's largest oil refinery today. It's in Beji, about 150 miles north of Baghdad. The Iraqi government, however, says official security forces are still in control of the facility. Stanley Reed covers energy matters from London for The New York Times. Mr. Reed, good morning.
Good morning.
So what do we know about where this refinery is and how significant a facility it might be?
The refinery is in sort of north central Iraq. It's the largest Iraqi refinery. It will not have a major impact on Iraqi exports to the outside world because at the moment all of those come from the southern part of the country, which so far has not been affected by this fighting.
Still, if flow from a significant refinery is interrupted like this, it does affect the global supply indirectly.
Well, it's obviously making the markets uncomfortable. I was looking at prices this morning from the Brent crude, for instance, which is a little over $114. It was about $108 per barrel about maybe 10 days ago. So it's up, but it's not spiking. I mean, the concern would be that something might happen that would affect those exports from the south. I think this probably definitely is going to affect its trajectory in the future.
Stanley Reed writes on energy matters for The New York Times. He's speaking to us from London. Mr. Reed, thank you.
Thank you.
We're talking the European benchmark price for crude oil there. The West Texas benchmark is up 0.3% this morning to $106.30 a barrel. The S&P 500 stock index closed at a record high yesterday after the chair of the Federal Reserve talked about signs of strength in the U.S. economy, but didn't seem to worry too much about inflation. Here's Janet Yellen at her news conference.
The data that we're seeing is noisy. I think it's important to remember that, broadly speaking, inflation is evolving in line with the committee's expectations.
In line. If Yellen had been yelling about inflation, that might have suggested that interest rates would go up earlier than expected. This morning, Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are unchanged, essentially. The FT 100 in London is up 0.8%. Marketplace Morning Report is a nonprofit, listener-supported service. A gift from you, yes, you, if you can, in any amount, helps the Marketplace crew keep telling the money stories behind the news of the day. Help us end the budget year in a strong position by making a gift at marketplace.org by June 30th, if you could. An international think tank called the Institute for Economics and Peace has a new report that tries to quantify the cost of violent strife of all kinds to individual taxpayers and gross domestic product, as well as global development. It's called the Global Peace Index. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
So the answer in this year's Global Peace Index is $9.8 trillion. That is how much the countries of the world spend on violence containment. Everything from buying tanks and paying soldiers to domestic policing and jails.
The economic costs amounted to 11.3% of global GDP.
Aubrey Fox of the Institute for Economics and Peace says countries that spend the least, like New Zealand and Qatar, are also among the most prosperous. This country spends quite a bit more.
10.2% of national GDP, which is per person about $5,500.
Fox says spending some of that on health care and education would deliver more benefit, but says Lauren Thompson at the conservative Lexington Institute,
much of what the United States spends on the military is intended to deter war. So in that sense, it may actually be a bargain.
And what does it buy? Well, everything from safer air travel to defense jobs nationwide. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Marketplace's economics guy Chris Farrell has been thinking of ways that American policy could help ratchet down tensions around the world. Typically, the thinking turns to military intervention, as we just said, but some say changing U.S. immigration policy, especially our acceptance of refugees from world hotspots, might help. Chris, good morning.
Hello, David.
So, Chris, you've been thinking about the role of the U.S. military, but you've also been linking this in your mind to what? To immigration?
To immigration, but the strengths of our economy. I don't know about you, David, but I get a sense that so much of our conversation about our foreign policy it revolves around the military, pro and con. And the other thing is, one thing that the U.S. does really well is absorb immigrants. So the question I'm raising is, why don't we tap into that ability and put a much greater emphasis on admitting more refugees and make that part of our foreign policy toolkit?
We're all reading or hearing these horrendous headlines from Syria about the civil war going on there and atrocious abuses of human rights there. How might a change in how we treat refugees, how we treat immigrants, address some of this?
There is no easy answer to Syria. And I looked at some numbers, David, and I found it stunning that the Syrian conflict began in the spring of 2011. And we admitted, if I had this right, we admitted 29 Syrian refugees. And then in 2012, 31. Now, there's been a change in 2014, and so more Syrians are going to be admitted, and we're talking maybe a couple of thousand, but I'm saying why not a lot of Syrian refugees? And our experience when we admitted the Hmong, when we admitted the Vietnamese, the Somalis, and the East Africans, is that as a nation, we benefited from these refugees coming to this country, and also they ended up with a better life.
Yet, in Washington, there's a lot of paralysis when it comes to doing almost anything about U.S. immigration policy.
There is. But again, the numbers we're talking about are fairly small. It actually might break through some of the logjam in Washington because we are struggling on the foreign policy level. So I think if you're giving the people an alternative, if the U.S. can take a lead and we can be a beacon of hope, I think you might actually break that logjam in Washington, D.C.
Chris Farrell keeps a close eye on economics for Marketplace. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.